here we go for episode number 15 of Football 52 and all things UNC football podcast with, of course, UNC head coach Ed Lamb and myself, Brady Hull. Coach, great to see you. A little sprinkles on my way in. I love the rain in the mornings as we are in spring and approaching summer. I mean, you can't beat it.
It's a beautiful morning. We don't want it to rain all day, probably, but maybe the farmers do. But moisture's good and nice clean smell in the air. It's a great morning.
Coach, and just briefly, we were talking about this right when you got in. You are just a man that's willing to just get after it, no matter what. That's what one of the things I've learned about you. And I know we joked about the snow shoveling thing a couple of weeks ago, and you, of course, were humble. You're like, I wasn't out there cleaning the whole thing up. But speaking of the farming and ranching thing, you know, you said you were helping your neighbor out figure out a busted sprinkler and things like that. And again, it just goes back in my head. I'm just thinking, man, this is a coach that's just willing to lend a helping hand. Just get after it, no matter what the situation calls for, whether it's shoveling snow, it's lending your ear to your players, to your staff, or helping a neighbor, a friend, with something maybe you're not even sure what to do, but you're going to be willing to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you said figure out, and he was doing the figuring. So I love the neighborhood that we're in. We've got a neighborhood with some small acreages in there and some irrigation rights most of the neighbors have. And then I've got this one neighbor. I'm fascinated with tractors. And I'm driving along the road one day, and I see a guy out there on this little like probably the smallest tractor with a PTO, a power takeoff, and a three-point hitch that you could have. And so I pulled over, and I needed a little bit of tractor work done on the property, and I don't have one with a three-point hitch. So I pull over and I said, hey, my name's Ed Lamb. I'm one of your neighbors. Would you be interested in doing a little bit of tractor work on my property? And he goes, no time. Didn't even look at me.
So, sounds about right.
Yeah. And so, you know, he was busy, and I understood. I've been busy before too. So I drive on. A couple of days later, I saw him doing some stuff, pulled over and said, hey, it's me again. Your neighbor looks like you're picking up some weeds here. Happy to help out just for the neighborhood. He was doing it around the community, kind of the collection pond that used for irrigation. So I get in there working with him a little bit. He shows up about 2 days later with his tractor and the implement that I was hoping for. And so since then, Stan, my neighbor, I think he's got 13 tractors on his property. So to me, it's like a museum.
Yeah.
And I'll just go over and just learn from him. And so what I was learning, last night was to use a shovel and dig up his sprinkler mechanisms.
He points around and you start digging. Oh, yeah,
he points.
Love that.
Yeah, he points and then tells me what I'm doing wrong. But, you know, in the meantime, I'm learning and I enjoy being out there. And, my son can be with me at a lot of that stuff where he just kind of has room to roam around and not get into too much trouble. I can keep an eye on him. You know how that goes, finding activities that we can do with these kids with disabilities, especially autism, because their interests are scattered all over the place and safety is always an issue. And so to be out in the middle of a pasture, it's an opportunity for us to spend some time together.
And I love that side of it, too. As you said, children, adults, whatever, with autism, they do things just in a different way. They play in a different way, and they're fascinated by different things. And to me, that's the fascinating part, is kind of watching what they're interested in. But I love this story because here you are, a Division I head football coach. You pull over, you ask a guy, this older gentleman, this old farm. I'm just picturing this, grandpa.
He's exactly what everybody's picturing.
Absolutely. And here you are trying to get a conversation going. Maybe you need some help. And it's like, no, hard no. Get out of here. Too busy. Right. And instead of just walking away and never communicating with this person again, you kept going. And now, look, you've got a pretty good, probably a really unique relationship with this guy where you're learning different things that maybe you've never even thought of before.
Yeah, he's a fascinating guy to talk to. He's seen so much of life and really, I love talking football. And if people, sometimes I'll be talking with somebody, whether it's a family member or a friend, or we're having dinner with somebody, Sarah and I are getting together with a couple that we know, and then somebody will all of a sudden say, oh, coach, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was talking football this whole night. And I'm like, no, I love to talk about football and my job and stuff like that. I should sometimes I'm like, I should be asking you more questions, So, but Stan is, I think, completely unaware or he just maybe has sympathy that we went through such a rough season.
Stop bringing it up.
Right. But and when he does, it'll just be kind of like, you know, like at the end of last year, obviously when the season's going, I'm not stopping bystands.
Sure.
Very
different,
often. But,
different style.
You know, in the out of season, I have a little more time for stuff like that. So I'll stop by his house and he's always got the garage up. He's always tinkering with something, working on a tractor all through the winter or whatever. And so I'll stop by and I'll go, how'd the season go? So I'm sitting here, you know, we're 0-11.
Not bad.
0-11 is just so refreshing to have somebody ask about it, but not really know. And you know, a little bit of reprieve from all of the, you know, I guess, you know, self. At that point, you know, at the end of last season, I was just so distraught about not where we were going, because I have confidence in where we're going as a program. But I did think that we'd be able to pull out a few wins and build a little bit more momentum.
Well, it's interesting that you bring this story up as soon as you walk in, and we're asking. Yeah. I'm saying, how you doing? I was thinking, you know, we're going to get into some bullet points today. Yeah. But one of the questions was going to be, how are you adapting to the community? How's the community adapting to you? And this is the story that I love so much about who you are as a coach. I don't know many coaches that I can just picture pulling over on the side of the road, asking this guy a question, maybe for some help, absolutely gets shut down, and then keeps going and ends up doing shovel work and digging and doing all that stuff. And that's so I would imagine with that attitude, and this is what I've heard in the community, coaches, people just absolutely love it. So I would guess the adapting is going pretty well on both sides.
We, as a family, we've just learned that the more we can just pour ourselves into the community and count this as our forever stop, in the face of the fact that coaches don't do that very often.
Sure.
Generally, we, as coaches, we either win to the point where we can't sustain the success long enough and people say, oh, the game's passed you by, or we don't win enough. And so, you know, 9 out of 10 times a coach probably moves on to another job. And yet, you know, the only way that my wife and I have learned to keep some sanity in this business is we pour our whole selves in. You know, we don't want to be out in the community and wondering whether we should make close friendships or not. What we've learned is that the friends that we've left geographically, they're still our friends, and we have more friends, and we have more enriched relationships, and we feel lucky for that. And our kids are starting to learn that too. And so, the neighborhood that I'm in now, it's kind of what I've always dreamed of. Is you know, it's kind of a, you know, we're not out there on 40 or 360 acre farms, right? But it's just small acreages where people are outside a lot. You get to know them. They value the land. They value their neighbors. And, you know, same thing. About a week ago, I had another neighbor clearing out his section of the ditch. And I thought, well, that looks fun. So I jump in there. And he's got a big 10,000 acre ranch just east of here. But, you know, this is his in-town ranch of 5 acres or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then you know, I'm over there helping him out. And he's like, hey, you were going to try to move some of the gravel off one part of your property to another, right? And he said, you could use my skid steer for that. And so then the next day, the skid steer is sitting in my front driveway. I'm like, man, this is kind of cool, you know, where you just – everybody's helping each other out, really looking out for each other. And I think a lot of neighborhoods are like that. But we're just happy to be where we're at.
Well, and, you know, I always wonder this. You know, doing the talk show every day, you know, when a new coach is hired, they always say the right things. You know, they always say, I'm going to get involved in this community. That's going to be it. And it's good. But a lot of people just listening to that don't know exactly what that is. What does that mean, getting involved in the community? Is that just doing what the school asks you to do? You know, going out to coaches' shows, events that you guys have, awards nights, things like that. Things that are all organized by the school. Or is it, to me, getting involved in the community is exactly what you're talking about. People that you don't necessarily have anything to gain from. You know, maybe it's a helpful hand on the farm once in a while or something like that. But I know that's not your approach. But it's, hey, I want to learn more about what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, again, you and I sit down for breakfast a few months ago, and it wasn't, hey, what can I gain from this conversation? It's like, hey, what could be really interesting that I haven't done before? And that's what I really hope your players and your coaches and the people surrounding you are really digging into. Because that's one of the most fascinating things about me, about you so far, Coach, is that willingness to just get to know somebody, even if down the road it's not going to make a lick of difference between your, you know, as far as your success as a head football coach.
I appreciate that. There are so many hours every day where if anybody were to be observing me from the outside, they would think that my goal is to be the world's worst rounded person. I mean, I am like riveted on video and coaching. And just like, you know, I have this ability or disability to just kind of tune everything else out and really focus on one thing. And so for me, it's so peaceful to put myself in a different environment where, you know, I'm over at Stan's house helping him with irrigation and he's teaching me how to do things. Even like I kept putting the pliers on the sprinkler system had some hexagonal type twist points, right? And so we're using a pair of adjustable pliers. And I kept putting it on the wrong way. And he wasn't telling me why it was the wrong way. He just kept saying, other way, other way. Oh. And then, you know, pretty soon I'm like, he's messing with me because I'm doing it wrong every time. How could I not get it right at least 50% of the time or close to it? You know, and then finally kind of taught me. And you know, I'm learning a lot about sprinklers as I go. But that you know, that ag life to me and all things associated with that, very peaceful to raise the chickens and take care of the horses and see the crops come up and, you know, be in a community where, you know, they're not necessarily living and dying by my success on the football field and they value me as a neighbor. It's tremendous respite from, you know, my daily life as a football coach.
This is one of my favorite stories so far, Coach. It's really cool. I'm glad you shared that, a little bit of that with us. I suppose I didn't even ask. I just kind of went into it. But you're just so willing to go there with me on that, and I think it's fascinating. One of the key points as we start breaking into our football talk here, again, episode 15, we didn't get to this point last week. I think last week was our record, our longest episode. We don't really predetermine how long these episodes are going to be. We just turn the microphone on. We have a couple of bullet points and away we go. This is why it's so much fun for me because this is, you know, we're just going back and forth. We have our points we're going to get to, but it usually takes us to 14 other points. Yeah. And we didn't get to pressure release training last week. And I know you were bummed about that. You're like, oh man, we didn't even hit that. I was like, at some point we got to shut this down. But now we want to start with that. So let's just break into it. Pressure release training.
Sure. I appreciate you bringing that up. And the reason that it was kind of on my mind last week is I had mentioned to you that as soon as spring ball is done and we kind of get the guys through finals week and out on their vacations or what we call discretionary period for the month of May, at that point, I really dive into the yard work around the house. I'm trying to clean up the property and getting the horses out of their winter mode and into their spring and summer mode, which is a different type of riding and getting them retrained because in the winter, we kind of ride really through the season. We ride our horses as time is available and obviously weather. You know, it can just be too cold sometimes. Sure. And windy or wet. So I was out there on the horse that gives me the most problems is Hank. I got this horse. I got two horses right now. A Blackjack is really well trained. He was a champion horse that was, you know, given to me in his older age. And Blackjack's just never any trouble for anybody. But Hank's a major problem. He's reared up before, slammed me into a barn, spilled me several times. I mean, I have he's got a lot of athleticism, so I don't want to give up on him. But he's just spooked all the time. He has such a strong herd instinct. Anytime I've got him out there alone, he's kind of worried about everything but me, you know. And so that's what I'm working with him on. And the guy that trained me for training horses, and I'm sure he learned it from somebody else, or maybe everybody that really is into the horse world uses this phrase and this philosophy of pressure and release training. And so I was overworking Hank against this fence line, trying to teach him to keep his head down when he turns. And trying to get him to, you know, neck rein and heel rein as well. And so But what's on my mind is what I had talked to you about a couple of weeks ago when I came down a little too hard on the guys for playing poker.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's the same idea of pressure and release. With horse training, you want to put pressure on a horse. They respond and move away from pressure. But if there's never any release, then you just have this horse that requires a tremendous amount of pressure. So if you would have been watching me on Hank a couple of weeks ago and I'm trying to, you know, turn him against this fence – I've got the reins like way up by the top of his neck where he's more sensitive and my pressure means a little more to him. And, you know, I'm really pushing hard with my outside leg trying to get him to turn. It's not the way that a true cowboy would be out there like with a rope trying to turn a horse on a dime, you know, or, you know, there was just way too much pressure, right? And so you've got to get to this point where there's release and that's – I just was sitting there thinking because I'd felt so bad that I had come down on the team in a way that didn't show understanding of the fact that, look, you know, marijuana, painkillers, alcohol, you know, staying out in the bars, that's a totally different type of threat to your playing career than poker and snowboarding and some of these other things that can be healthy and can be a danger, right, to your football career. So that's where I failed with the players is I didn't get that release. And so I wasn't training them to make decisions on their own, right, or to make decisions with very light direction. Eventually, I'm trying to get Hank to the point where I can just give him the slightest rein on the neck or the slightest pressure of my leg, and he responds to it the way Blackjack does. And obviously, that's where I've got to get the team to because they're in the game. I'm not out there coaching them up every second during the game. It's them that's in the game, and they've got to be trained up and ready to respond, you know, really on their own to stimulus.
This is what I like about our text exchange when you say, "Hey, here's kind of the things on my mind."
Yeah.
I'm thinking automatically pressure release. That's got to be something to do with cornerbacks or something like that. But this is why this podcast is so much fun because here you're connecting another something else that's completely different, but in this case, kind of the same. To how you approach your football team is, hey, I got to put pressure on you, but there has to be that time when I guess you pick your spots. And you know, I was a farm kid, a ranch kid. I was terrible on the horse, though. When I could buy a four-wheeler, coach, I went after it. My grandpa was a horseman. He was a cowboy. And he would always say things like that to me. Like, you are way too tense. You're pulling and you're jerking and the horse is not responding. And I was like, I don't know. So then the four-wheeler just worked because you just pressed the little gas thing and away you went.
Right.
But that I'm sitting here thinking about all of those lessons that I'm getting without knowing that those are lessons at the time. Here you are with this situation going, man, if I just keep applying pressure on this horse, it's going to end up pretty bad. But if I back off a little bit, give that horse a little bit of freedom, now we're going to start having an understanding here and it's going to kind of work together. And I think that connection to your football players is wonderful.
Yeah, because I always have football on my mind, and especially the many, I'll give myself some grace and say small mistakes that I make every day. You know, I'm not beating myself up. I don't feel like I'm failing the team or the mission right now. I feel like we're really on a great track, so I don't want to overstate it. But every day, you know, when I'm on my drive home or I'm at home and kind of decompressing from the pressure of the day. There are always some small regrets, some small interactions that I wish I had been more skilled at. And so that was just one of them where I'm out there on Hank and he's kind of like dangerous enough when I'm trying to train him, right? And my mind's not 100% on him. So I'm probably putting myself in a little bit more risk than I should because he requires, you know, especially when I'm trying to teach him something new, he requires a lot of concentration, but yeah, I just couldn't get that off my mind that I had not done a skillful job of talking to the team about the danger of poker.
Well, and again, different horses require different training and different handling too. I mean, you're talking about two different horses. Blackjack, I believe that's the one you said David Afari's been riding, right?
Yes.
That horse doesn't require that much because you're comfortable enough to say, hey, guy that's never ridden a horse before, have at it. Yeah. I don't need to be micromanaging this horse as much as I need to be, you know, messing with Hank. That one takes a little more, but I still have to apply the appropriate amount of pressure or the release or whatever that might be. And you can really use that. You can use that for everyday life.
Absolutely. It reminds me of a story where David and I are riding, you know, and I've got this one kind of it's an older arena area. It hasn't been dragged or taken care of properly, but there's still quite a bit of sand on it. And I was teaching David to, you know, come to an abrupt stop, or even – and because Blackjack's so good at it, he'll execute a skid stop, you know, without a lot of without a lot of skill necessarily or experience by the rider. And then, but Hank does a little bit more of like a crow hop stop sometimes when he's nervous, which feels like bucking, right? And so David's over there, and he's the one that's supposedly new, but he's at a gallop and skid stopping. And then I'm over here like holding on for dear life.
He looks like the rider, yeah. And you don't look like the rider because of the horse, right?
And I've told him, hey, that saddle horn is for ropers. Do not touch that saddle horn. You know, so that was kind of one of the first day lessons for him. And yet here I am holding on for dear life because Hank's kind of crow hopping to a stop here.
That's all about perception too, because if someone's driving by, they're going to go, wow, one guy's got the horse thing figured out. The other guy, he's struggling. But we're talking about two different animals at this point.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And there, I probably should be clear. I mean, Hank's a good horse. I'm sure that a real cowboy would make Hank look very trained. You know, I'm just doing the best I can with a horse that's giving me a little bit of trouble.
Well, again, it's all part of it. The fact that you're just willing to get in there and do that kind of stuff, man, I love it. You know, when you're thinking, I mean, how much in your day you're messing with the horses, you're working with neighbors, is everything related to in the back of your mind? Are you always thinking how is this football related?
I think for me it has to be. The first coach I worked for, Mike Maynard, I think I've talked about him before with you. Tremendously successful coach, such a professional. He taught me what coaching was, and I wanted to be a coach because I was kind of like done playing and still wanted to be around the game, and I had no idea what a coach was, and he taught me everything, and so many of the lessons just have resonated now in year 27 of coaching. But he used to say, and of course I was in my first second year with him, but he would say a coach shouldn't have any hobbies. You know, a lot of these coaches that were beaten because we were really successful. He was successful before I was there, while I was there, and long after I was gone. And he would always say, well, these other coaches have got a lot of hobbies. We just do football. And then as I was there a few more years and moved from defensive line coach to defensive coordinator and became a little bit more of his kind of right-hand man or part of his leadership staff, went over to his house a few times. He had hobbies. You know, he didn't. It might not have been golf or the same hobbies that other coaches have, but he had hobbies and he had things to take his mind off of football. But I do think that they're still in the back of every coach's mind, maybe every like true professional's mind, that your work is also your purpose. And if we're not, if we don't have some of those challenges that are going on at work, top of mind. Even when we're actively at work, I don't think we're taking full advantage of the context of our of work within our lives, right? And that's just how I feel about it. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I do try to see, you know, in a lot of the things that I'm doing, see the parallels to what I'm working on at football.
I think it goes back to the key point here: the pressure release that. When done in a positive way, you know, taking a mental break, and it's not like you're checking out and you're not going to – football is going to touch your brain, especially a guy like you, all the time. But it's healthy to be able to have that release from it for a bit as long as it's a positive one. And I know that's your message is like, hey, don't check out. You know, release for a moment or whatever that looks like, whether it is reading a book or riding horses or whatever. But you have to be sure, you know, you do that within the confines of being safe and treating yourself right, because at the end of the day, we do have a big task at hand. But that pressure release, you're putting pressure on yourself. When the season starts, like you said, I'm not pulling over as much to help these farmers or talk to these farmers or pick their brain. I can do it right now. I can release that part. Doesn't mean you're not physically working. Maybe that's harder in some sense, depending on what the job is. But you're mentally giving yourself a break. Still keeping the eye on the prize at the same time.
The test for me that I always consider is you know, do I have any desire to be out there doing the things that I don't have to do every day? You know, in terms of like kind of like the ag life, or every day I've got to feed and water the horses and chickens. And that's really, I've got that to, you know, slick enough to the point where that's about, you know, 6-7 minutes early in the morning and then checking the water again at night. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go by the wayside when the season really hits. And even, you know, and then there's a recruiting season. And so you asked me about 2 weeks ago, you referenced back to my opening a press conference where I talked about the asparagus.
Sure, yeah.
And I froze a little bit because I thought, I haven't weeded around the asparagus. And so I got out there a few days later because you had put it on my mind. And I was about to take a picture and send it to you because
yes.
I wanted to show you what second year asparagus looks like. Maybe you're already aware. Maybe you grew it yourself already.
I'm not. But I like asparagus, yeah. And I would like to know more.
So I wanted to show you. It's already gone to seed. And, you know, maybe it's applicable to where our team's at. They all came back up. So all the asparagus came back up. There's a few volunteers, so it's starting to spread.
I need to take notes.
It's not as strong as it, you know, will be when we can actually start harvesting, but it's promising. And so I almost took a picture. I actually pulled out my phone and I was like, it's kind of corny. I don't want to
Next time, please do. I'm a gardener as well. Well, yeah. I try. I put seeds in the ground and then nothing seems to happen very much. My wife's good at it, though. No, I think that – and again, seriously, we didn't talk about a T-shirt being made with the asparagus. There's some kind of thing there, Coach. I think there's a marketing plan there. We'll get the marketing agent on the line. But, you know, that has me thinking of other things too. What I've learned when I'm talking to you with the amount of players that you have and the assistant coaches and how well you know your guys and you're getting to know these guys and you're bringing guys over for dinners and some want to take it to the next step and say, hey, I want to come out and ride horses. I want to get to know what you do out here. In your head, that's a juggling act too, because the football job itself is, you know, X's and O's. It's film study. It's, you know, reorganizing how you're going to run your offense, your defense, your special teams. It's talking to people. It's coaching. It's counseling. It's individual conversations. How do you keep your brain focused when this is the mission today? But at the same time, because again, you thinking about weeding the asparagus last week while we were doing the podcast, I would have never known that your mind went there. Mm-hmm. You were focused on what we were talking about. How do you keep that going? Because I got to imagine there's so many balls up in the air and you can't really afford to drop one.
Yeah, certainly there's the priority list that, you know, we all have. And you know, I check myself a lot on the priorities, obviously, you know, for us. All of us, the family is or should be the priority. You want to talk about a side conversation of pressure release in terms of raising an autistic child? Mm-hmm. That's where do you put the pressure?
Oh, right? My gosh. Oh,
that's
yes.
The big question to me because it's so easy to figure out where to put the pressure on typical kids or ourselves. But anyway, we could come back to that maybe if you want. But obviously you got the family. Anything that were to pop up at any time with the family is that takes precedence over anything else I've got going on. And then with the football team, here's a different type of pressure. So you think about all of the spring breaks you've had or all of the, you know, May when you can get away, you just got out of school, you just got, you know, all through your college years. Think about all the things that happened, all the stories you have for that period. Well, I've got 120 guys that I'm just staying awake at night hoping no car crash, no accidents. No bad luck, you know, the chances of the whole month of May going by without one of my guys getting into something, some kind of situation that's regrettable, those chances are pretty small that I'm going to escape that, right? And so now I have this extended family that is also my profession and my passion where I'm trying to lead these guys to success. And there's a lot of, consternation there. There's a lot of worry on my part about what goes on during periods like this. And so anything that's falling beneath that, you know, trying to get to know the community, I try to meet people on their terms, right? So are you a golfer or do you skeet shoot? Okay, well, like, okay, I'm ready for all that. I'm a jack of all trades. You know, I'm pretty decent at a lot of different things. I'm not great at really anything, but I can get out there and weed or golf or shoot or, you know, whatever on your terms, fish. I've kind of, you know, tried to meet people on their terms with that. But I can drop all that in a second and the ag life too, with the exception of a few minutes every day that it takes to actually keep those animals alive, you know, as far as how pretty the pastures and the property is looking, that's, you know, that's secondary to the family and then the extended family of football and the mission of bringing this community of championship football program.
Well, I joked about this several weeks ago, but, you know, as we're in that between period, we got camp season approaching. We'll talk about that next. But I joke about the popular novel, and it was turned into a terrible TV show, and then it got canceled, but it was Under the Dome. And I always think about coaches in this point, where when you're not in touch with your players on the daily, like you normally will be when the season hits, when you get into camp season, you just wish you could put a dome over everybody, and then, okay, these are your parameters where you can go and do and whatever, but unfortunately, you can't do that. They got to go out, and you got to trust everybody. And again, things out of their control can happen too, and that's the scary part about this. So I know you're probably at that point where you're counting the days until we get to the actual camp season.
Oh man, you're holding up a mirror that I don't like the reflection, because I'm immediately thinking the Truman Show, and like, if I could, would I put all these guys in a dome and have all these cameras on them and be able to intercede and put people in their path and keep them out of harm's way? There would be a tendency for me to want to do that, which is kind of evil.
Was that Ed Harris? Ed Harris? Yeah. You're the Ed Harris in this situation, and all of your guys are the Jim Carreys.
I know it's wrong, but just to keep them safe and progressing and make them, have an awesome life, but in the end, I realized that this is such a developmental stage in their lives, as it was for me, and that's why I'm in coaching, is to try to be a positive impact on them. If I could push a button and have it all be successful, it would be so tempting to just push that button, but then all the experiences would be gone. Yeah. They would be missed, and that's really what this whole thing's about.
It's like parenting. It's like a job. It's all this stuff. Always, I'm amazed at how it all comes back together, because so many. I'm sure parents are saying the same thing. Yeah, I would like to be Ed Harris. You know, and we're in graduation season, and we got a lot of kids getting ready to go on and do whatever, and they're probably feeling a little Ed Harris-y right about now if they can get that going. You get the point for references. Mine was a terrible canceled TV show, Truman Show. That was a fantastic movie.
Well, I had to go to something else because I had no idea what you're talking about Under the Dome.
I don't think anybody did. That's the sad part. All right, so what's next, Coach? Camp season is approaching. We're at end of the month, right? We're jumping back in?
Yes. Justin Walterscheid's our camp director, and then James Pazak does a lot of our recruiting coordinator stuff. Aaron Fernandez is kind of the director of recruiting. So all those guys are really involved in camp planning, and then the logistics falls to Eddie Gonzalez, the DFO. There's a lot of work going on with camps year round, but then it just really ramps up as soon as the guys, as soon as the players leave in May, and we're getting ready for those camps that get rolling in June. We're excited about the camps with the way that we've prioritized in-state recruiting, and especially local recruiting in the region of Northern Colorado. These camps are critical to us because they're prospective student athletes coming to our campus and performing and competing, and a chance for our campus to get exposure, a chance for our football program to get exposure, for our coaches to show the type of energy, positive energy, that we can bring on a daily basis. The facilities, which I think Northern Colorado is underrated. Our football program is underrated for facilities. If our locker room was a little bit bigger, that would help in some ways, or closer to the stadium. But in terms of like what we actually need, you talk about a practice field and a weight room and the quality of those two things, I think we're at the top of the conference, not the bottom of the conference. So I really love for the chance for high school kids to come over and be able to see that weight room and see those practice facilities. And that's if I were to prioritize facilities, that big word that means a lot of different things. At Oregon, that means player lounges and stuff like that. Now everywhere, I guess it does. But if I were to prioritize it, it's going to be weight room first, and it's going to be practice fields, the field space, the layout, the safety. All of that is top notch at UNC.
Yeah, and I remember when that weight room, finally got done, and you walk in there, and it's, it was a game changer for everybody in athletics, because now you got room where you can have other, football team, you can have volleyball players over here, and you're not stepping on each other left and right. So I know that has been, and it's gorgeous, and you got the nutrition center in there too. It is they really went all out on this.
Yep. An outstanding job designing. I wasn't a part of any of that and didn't know it was here and was ready to take on the task without that. And you know, being – I don't know if you can find another coach who's more dedicated to the weight room than I am. And by dedicated, I'm not talking about like my personal dedication. I'm talking about like we have 20 hours per week with the players allowed by the NCAA. And weight room counts. And so there's a lot of coaches that cut back, especially during the season, to, you know, maybe they're cutting back to an hour and a half or 2 hours a week in the weight room. And we are staying strong at 4 hours per week in the weight room.
You practice what you preached. You know, you've been preaching that from day one to me on this show, on this podcast, the importance of working out, of building your body for whatever that position is you're going to be doing. And you've talked about it. And I know we do these podcasts, really, for those that don't know, we do this on a Wednesday morning, bright and early. We come in here at 7 o'clock. And part of the reason was, you know, hey, I'm getting in and I'm going for extra workouts. Guys need a little extra attention, part of that pressure portion of it.
Yes.
And we're going to get in. You're going to get in. You're going to go do it. Because that is such an important factor. So you can understand why when you say, hey, that weight room, that's priority number one. We got to get that thing right. And, you know, judging by your conversations with me, that's been the big change with a lot of these guys.
It's the promise I make to the team, you know, and I want it to motivate them. I tell them if these words that I'm saying about weight room don't motivate you, then this isn't the right place for you. I can't promise you how many games we're going to win. That has a lot to do with our opponents, that, you know, that every game is different. You can play a team 10 times and have 10 different results, right? But we're going to be the biggest, strongest team in the conference. That we can control. That's a promise that I can deliver on. Because that's my training, that's my background, I've done it before, I know how to get that accomplished, and we will sacrifice whatever time we have to in the meeting rooms and on the field in order to be the biggest, strongest team first. When we also become good at football, that's when it all comes together, and I can't wait for that moment.
What are the dates we need to be looking out for, Coach? I know I've asked you before, but as we're really diving in, if you have those... camp season, as we talked about approaching, it is a time where you're excited to get everybody back in the swing of things, get them ready to rock and roll. You switch from spring ball in that mode, and you know, I'll ask you when we get to it, like the mindset that changes. What is the mindset? I mean, are you feeling more like, hey, this is going to be closer to what it looks like when we get into the fall, or are we still kind of, it's still kind of this easing into things?
Yeah, for us, the big date that I'm excited about right now, the next one is May 27th. That's when the players get back into town. I'm going to have a barbecue at my house and have the whole team over and just kind of kick back for a night, because the next morning we roll and we'll start our 9-week strength conditioning summer program. And we have, you know, like I think I've talked about this before, you have the ability now to practice almost year round. There can't be contact and there can't be protective equipment, but we can work on, you know, the kind of the fundamentals of how we move within our system as much as we, you know, would like to do throughout that 9-week period. So the priority will be lifting and conditioning, but we'll also be doing some practice, and that all starts up on May 28th. We've got that camp season. A lot of our players work the camps and enjoy being around the camps,
sure, yeah.
But that camp season starts. One of the camps we're really excited about, because tends to get a lot of prospects, is what we call our mega camp. We've got coaches from all over the West, FBS coaches, Division II coaches, coaches from all over the place, FCS coaches. And so we're not hogging that exposure. We want we want the local players here to be exposed to as many schools as they can be, right? If other schools are coming into Colorado, that may prove a little bit of a detriment to our ability to recruit these players. But we're not trying to hold anybody back. And so we've got over 20 different Division I schools represented at our mega camp. That's June 21st. The 22nd is the 7-on-7 camp that a lot of the local high schools participate in. And then we've got a series of team camps. And all of that information is readily available on all the social media platforms. We do a pretty good job. Our camp director, Justin Walterscheid, does a pretty good job of getting all that information out there.
All right, Coach, as we kind of wrap this up on the team camp side of things, talk to us about that.
Oh, the team camp out. Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
So when we first started this thing, I was deep into the comfort crisis and sharing that book with our players on a weekly basis, kind of boiling down three or four chapters at a time into a readable a talking point and maybe like one paragraph. Well, one of the concepts in there was like kind of the rewilding concept of and there was even a study, and I may have shared it with you, where a group of students goes out into an area where there's no cell phone service. And they go through all these stages of grief where at first it's like denial and they're walking around holding their phones up, you know, in the air and there's no service. And then there's bargaining where they're trying to hike to the top of a nearby hill and see if they can get it from there, you know. And then there's, you know, eventually kind of acceptance where they're, you know, they're just learning to do some other things. But there's this kind of three-day rewilding process that the book describes where by the third day, you know, players or not players, these students were much more in tune to the nature around them, their bodies, the rhythms, the sounds, the feel of being out in nature. We're not quite going to get to a full 3 days, but at the end of our training camp and at the end of our 9-week summer conditioning period and before training camp begins, we're going to take these boys on a camp out. And I'm going to use one of the fairly local Boy Scout properties, so there'll be some. You know, we're not going to rough it out on the ground. You know, sleeping on cardboard or stuff like that.
There'll be a lot of people to keep track of that deep out.
Yeah, but it will be. You know, will be an opportunity for them to significantly change their daily routine. We're going to bring up some live food in my livestock trailer, and some of our guys are nice. Skilled in that, and we're going to be able to dress out the animals and put them in the ground. We're going to do it with the Tongans are called an umu, the underground oven, and, you know, really just have an opportunity to get to know each other without any weight room around, without the pressure of football. And I've done it in the past. I did it several times at Southern Utah, and it can really bring a team together. We'll bring up, you know, wiffle ball and horseshoes and chess and cards and all kinds of things that kind of can facilitate hanging out and getting to know each other. But really, it's mostly the magic of it happens organically.
I think those kind of things are, they can really be powerful. You know, as you're getting ready, I mean, we're not that far away. Here it is, May 15th. We're not that far away to when these guys are going to be relying on each other on the football field. And, you know, you get there on the field and it's going to be all the preparation. Everything that you've done to that point is going to have you prepared and your teammates prepared to go out and try to win, try to succeed. And I think everything you're talking about, whether it's the weightlifting or just the practices in general, lead you to that. But these kind of things, I think you can really point back to. And for them to, because it's kind of fun too. It's kind of exciting. Maybe some of these guys have never done that before. Maybe some of them, that's all, they've done a lot of it. Maybe there's a lot of Boy Scouts too. But it's going to be an opportunity to get to know each other. And I keep going back to the David Afari riding horses thing. This is an experience he's never had before. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm pretty sure, as we talked about, it seems like he values that. Yeah. This might be one of those things that really strikes a chord with a lot of these guys and brings them closer together.
It does. There are learning experiences. There are fun experiences. You know, small hikes. The taking of an animal's life is a serious thing that not a lot of our guys have. You know, how to do that humanely, and yeah, we only do it with the guys that are trained. But everybody's there to kind of watch, mm-hmm. and you know, that's a serious thing that I don't like necessarily 100% love exposing the guys to, because some of them are like, oh, I don't want to eat that now. We're like, hey, we just finished our 9-week strength and conditioning period. You're as strong as you can be. You need this protein. But, you know, there's something, I think, out of touch with just, you know, going your whole life and grabbing meat out of the refrigeration section at the grocery store and not really realizing, you know, how this thing all is meant to occur. And I know people have different political viewpoints. I'm not trying to get into that or whatever. But, you know, for those that do eat meat, you know, to have somebody in a factory doing it is, to me, no better morally than us actually doing it out there with trained people. But, you know, if you've been around that before, as I have, and done it wrong, you know, I once tried to take a goat's life and didn't quite knock it out correctly, you know. So the goat is kind of, and this was in front of the players, you know, the goat's turning its head, staring back at me, wailing. And, you know, it was like, emotional experience because I failed, and there was the pressure of doing it in front of the players, trying to teach them to do it correctly. And you know, I had to do two hits on the goat to knock it out instead of one. So I'm getting way too graphic. Probably going to get a bunch of hate email and stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
The PETA people are going to be coming at us. Yeah. You're just making me hungry, to be honest. Yeah. I'm just thinking about this goat. You. I'm like, actually, goat meat's pretty freaking good. So I enjoy that.
If you say goat tacos to the Southern Utah team that was there during that era, you know, that team that we took, they know exactly what goat tacos. So they've got a picture in their mind of what it takes to produce a goat taco. And probably the only goat tacos they've ever had in their life.
Yeah, you talking about this, for me, this is just like, I mean, being a farm kid, I was in 4-H and I would have pets. They were my steers, my 4-H steers, and they were my pets, but I knew they were going to be on my table in a couple of months. So it did nothing to me. It never bugged me at all because I grew up that way. And I am amazed at some people that just have no idea. And that's not like a bad thing. It's just that was not their world. So they think they go to the supermarket and there it is. No, there's a process to that. And that can be a really unique learning process too. So I think it's going to be fun. You have to update us the following podcast when you guys get back because I'll be curious to kind of hear some of the responses.
Well, I might have to. I mean, if you're ingrained in that community, I might have to go through you to source some of these animals. You know,
my dad would point and I would just go do whatever he said. I didn't ask questions. I didn't learn. I was not the good farm kid. Yeah. I did not adapt well.
I know it's going to be educational for our players. I know there's going to be some great moments that they'll remember for the rest of their lives and hopefully some learning moments up there as well. Really looking forward to that.
I love it, Coach. Today's episode has been really unique. It's been fun. We kind of talked about just connecting, you know, with everyday life to what you're doing with your football program. It's okay. We take a break from the depth chart talk for a while. I know we've been pushing pretty hard on that.
It's a good thing that these walls are soundproof because I feel like Tanner would have maybe jumped over here and hijacked all this ag talk, you know, if he knew that this was going on.
Oh, he would be in on this, especially talking about, you know, livestock, all that. He's probably salivating right now. I'm sure he can hear.
He can sense it probably.
Coach, I know you got to get running, man. Always appreciate these. I love how you shoot me the way our process is to pull back the curtain. Coach will send me a text of three just bullet points, and I don't ask questions. So that's kind of my process with this. I didn't know that was going to be my process, but it's become that process of I'm not going to ask any follow-up. I'm not going to say, hey, what does that mean exactly? I want to be prepared. I want to just go right into it raw, since we're talking about livestock. I want to go right into it. And, these make for some really fun conversations. So, again, appreciate you as always. I know it's going to keep getting busier for you. So get those sessions in with your neighbor here in the next couple of weeks because it's going to ramp up.
Doing everything I can. The irrigation water came in last night, so there's a lot of pressure in the neighborhood right now.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, my friend. And, Coach, we'll talk to you next week as we'll get set for episode 16. We're approaching the 20s. We're making it.
Yeah, we're getting there. Thank you so much.
All right, Coach. Here it is, another episode of Football 52. This has been episode 15. We'll have another one for you by mid next week.